Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello, and thank you for joining us here on Africa Link, live from Bonn, Germany. I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura from the social media desk.
Coming up, DR Congo in limbo following the death of opposition leader Etienne Tshisekedi.
The opposition will weaken following his demise because he was a person who can never be easily repressed. He was in the hearts of many Congolese people.
We will be reading your messages about this a little later.
And Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel visits Turkey on a delicate mission. Do stay with us for these stories and more right after we find out what's been happening around the world.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. In Kinshasa, capital of the Democratic Republic of Congo, police fired tear gas on Thursday at more than 100 anti-government protesters who had gathered near the home of late opposition leader Etienne Tshisekedi. The veteran Congolese politician died yesterday in a Brussels hospital at the age of 84. He headed an opposition coalition which is negotiating the next steps in a power-sharing deal signed after President Joseph Kabila refused to step down at the end of his mandate in December. European Union President Donald Tusk urged Russia on Thursday to put pressure on separatists in eastern Ukraine to make sure that a flare-up in fighting ends and that a ceasefire is restored. Tusk said that the ceasefire violations that have taken place over the last few days have demonstrated a new level of intensity and brutality.
The fighting must stop immediately. The ceasefire must be honored. Russia should use its influence to disengage the Russian-backed separatists.
This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Morocco has said it will contribute just over $5 million to the construction of a new capital for war-torn South Sudan. Officials say work on expanding and modernising the new capital, Ramshill, which would replace Juba, will begin this year and is set to be completed by 2022 at a total cost of $10 billion. The announcement of Morocco's contribution was made by King Mohammed VI, who was visiting South Sudan a few days after his country had been readmitted to the African Union. Morocco and South Sudan also signed other cooperation agreements. German Chancellor Angela Merkel has urged Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to respect the democratic values of free speech. Merkel, who was on her first visit to Ankara since a failed coup attempt there in July, said she had discussed fighting terrorism with Erdogan and pledged her support in the search for the perpetrators of the military revolt. But she stressed that free speech and political diversity should not suffer as a result. The British government published its white paper on Thursday on withdrawal from the European Union, coming one day after Parliament backed Prime Minister Theresa May's plan to trigger negotiations by the end of March. It commits Britain to leaving the EU single market and customs union and to controlling immigration. David Davis, the Brexit minister, tried to ease some of the uncertainty surrounding the UK's departure.
We want the EU to succeed politically and economically. And so we approach the negotiation to come in a spirit of goodwill and working to an outcome in our mutual benefit.
For more news and information, please visit our website dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
You're listening to Africa Link with me, Crispin Mwakideu.
And Wanjiko Mwaura.
A gap hard to fill. That's how most supporters of deceased Congolese opposition leader Etienne Tshisekedi have described the death of the 84-year-old politician. Congolese police fired tear gas at dozens of his supporters near Tshisekedi's home in Kinshasa on Thursday as many tried to come to terms with the tragic news. Tshisekedi is regarded as the father of opposition in DR Congo, having opposed former President Mobutu Sese Seko back in the 80s. He was instrumental in striking a transitional deal with current President Joseph Kabila. The deal yet to be implemented would see Kabila hand over power at the end of this year. Isaac Mugabe with this report on what Tshisekedi's death could mean for the future of DRC politics, and it begins with reactions from his supporters.
We are shocked, and it is a great loss to the country since his death was not expected. We expected him to return to the country.
When I received the news this morning, I was touched. I'm a driver by profession, but when I heard the news, I didn't have the courage to drive.
I don't know what's next here in the DRC. He has passed away at a crucial time when he was much needed. We didn't really expect this to happen at this stage.
Despite his 84 years and failing health, Tshisekedi, known as the Sphinx for his short but profound statements, remained the undisputed leader of the opposition to Kabila. His death leaves opponents of President Joseph Kabila seriously weakened in their bid to force him out of power after he defied constitutional term limits to stay on last year. Emery Damien Kalwila, president of the Congolese Coalition for Transition in Brussels, said his death has come at the wrong time and is a big blow to the opposition.
The opposition will weaken following his demise because he was a person who can never be easily repressed. He was in the hearts of many Congolese people. He had the power to unite a divided opposition in the Congo and enabled them to participate in the peace talks with President Kabila, and therefore we think his death will cause a split in the opposition.
The founder of the country's first organized opposition party, the UDPS, in 1982 under former leader Mobutu Sese Seko's single-party rule, Tshisekedi was admired for remaining outside the folds of power in a country where many opponents have cycled in and out of government over the decades. Many Congolese have little faith that anyone else can carry on his legacy. Democratic Republic of Congo has never experienced a peaceful transition of power, and Kabila's refusal to stand down when his final term expired in December has raised fears the chronically unstable country could slide back into civil war.
Isaac Mugabe with that report on the impact of Tshisekedi's death. And Germany's Foreign Office has released a statement saying, on Etienne Tshisekedi's death, the Democratic Republic of Congo has lost a politician who for many years played a prominent role in Congo politics. Until the very end, he showed great commitment to the future of Congo and its people.
And on social media, messages of condolences continue streaming in for the late opposition leader Etienne Tshisekedi of the DR Congo. Winston Harvey Jaymond says, may his soul rest in peace. Nuhu Msangazi says, rest in peace, Etienne. Africa and the whole world will not forget your role in the fight for democracy. Your legacy lives on. We also have another comment coming in from Emanu Fataki, who says it is a sad time as the opposition leader Etienne Tshisekedi has died. His fight for democracy will never be forgotten in the Congo. Rest in peace, Papa Chichi.
In case you're just joining us, we are reading your messages on the death of Etienne Tshisekedi, the opposition leader in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
That's right, Crispin. We have another comment coming in right now from Vincent Kessie, who says he was a good leader. May he rest in peace. Another comment here from Gertrude James says, condolences to his entire family. Bernard Namunane says, Etienne Tshisekedi wa Mulumba, rest in peace. You fought a long fight, yet some things are just not meant to be. Another comment from Pius Dankala says, death has no mercy. May God rest his soul in peace. A final comment comes in from Titus Glave, who says, the president of DRC Congo, who never was. It's sad. Our sympathies to DR Congo and the entire family.
Thanks, Wanjiko. Moving on to the international scene now. Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel is visiting Turkey as Berlin tries to revive German-Turkish relations, which are facing turbulent times. Merkel is there to discuss the issue of stemming the flow of migrants. Her visit, however, has been criticized by those who accuse Turkey of silencing opposition and the media following last year's failed coup. Zipporah Nyambura reports.
Angela Merkel's visit to Turkey comes at a time when it is facing human rights abuse claims in the wake of July's failed coup against President Erdogan. More than 100,000 people have been sacked or suspended from the police, military, civil service and the private sector on suspicion of supporting the opposition Gulen movement. Some 40,000 people have also been jailed awaiting trial. Merkel wants Turkey to ensure full freedom of expression ahead of a crucial referendum on constitutional change, which will see presidential powers expanded.
With the attempted coup, we saw how the Turkish people stood up for democracy and for the rules of democracy in Turkey. That's exactly why, in this decisive phase, it's important that freedom of opinion is upheld. We also spoke about freedom of the media, and I also reiterated that it's important for German journalists to be accredited so that they can work here in areas that we're concerned with. And in connection with this, we talked about press freedoms.
Auf verschiedene Fälle, wo wir uns auch durchaus Sorgen machen.
Merkel said the referendum on constitutional change could be monitored by a delegation from the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, OSCE, so that what the people want is guaranteed. Ties between the two have also frayed since reports emerged that 40 mostly high-ranking Turkish soldiers requested asylum in Germany. Turkey's defense minister has urged Berlin to reject the applications and warned a failure to do so could damage relations, but Merkel told journalists that the decision will be based on the rule of law by the courts. The two also discussed Syria and Iraq with Erdogan and that they had agreed on the need for closer cooperation in the fight against terrorism.
I'm convinced that we're of the same opinion, that the fight against terror is very important.
The German Chancellor and Turkish leaders are expected to discuss a deal between the European Union and Ankara, under which Turkey stems the flow of migrants into Europe in return for billions of euros in aid. Turkey remains Germany's important ally in the migration deal with Europe and cooperation in the fight against the Islamic State in Syria.
Zipporah Nyambura reporting. Zimbabwean pastor and activist Evan Mawarire, famous for launching a protest under the hashtag This Flag, was arrested on arrival from the US and was set to appear in court today. He's being charged with subverting Zimbabwe's government.
And there has been a lot of discussion, Crispin, about this recent arrest. We have a comment from Doug Coltart, who says $15 billion US dollars goes missing from government-owned companies, but zero arrests. Pastor who spoke out against corruption returns, immediately arrested. And it's quite fascinating to trail these comments. We have another comment here from Guerrilla, who says, someone who goes by the name Guerrilla, who says Zimbabwean people have a responsibility to ensure that the government that they elected behaves properly. And this is all following the hashtag This Flag. Another person here going by the name Madinka02 says, don't give up, Pastor. We are with you. We shall overcome. And new Zimbabwe shining on the hilltop is coming.
And we also have a statement from Mulea Mwananyanda, I see.
Yes, indeed. He is the Amnesty International Deputy Regional Director for Southern Africa. And he said that the trumped up charges of subversion brought up against Pastor Evan Mwawarire is absolutely ridiculous and a total sham. And coming after a similar charge against him last year, it is designed to make him stop his human rights activism and to punish him for speaking out about the declining human rights situation in Zimbabwe. Well, this is definitely a story that we have been covering since this flag protest began last year. And we continue to cover this and monitor your comments and what you're saying about this particular story. We have a comment from Jose Lukanda, who says, this is Africa. You cannot even praise the flag of your country. The presidents think they created them. We have another comment here from Nyasa Musandu, who says the state is up to its usual business. It doesn't look like Pastor E will appear before our court today, and we already saw that he hasn't yet appeared. So we continue to watch this story for you.
That's right, Majik. We'll keep you posted on the developments. You are listening to Africa Link with me, Crispin Mwakideu.
And Wanjiko Mwaura.
Coming up in the next quarter of an hour, fury and condemnation after nearly 100 mentally ill patients die in South Africa.
They were not given food to eat. He was weak. He lost a lot of weight. So I could see there's a problem here.
And relief in northern Ghana as the price for dowry goes down.
Tonight will be the second game in the AFCON semi-finals. Who do you think will be up against Egypt come the finals on Sunday? We'll get to hear your thoughts on that and more stories.
So do keep it right here at Africa Link. South Sudan could soon see its oil production rise after the signing of two oil deals. Chinese and Malaysian companies have agreed to start drilling and producing oil in the world's youngest nation. South Sudan's government relies almost entirely on its oil industry, and a civil war has crippled the vital sector. As James Chimanyula reports, Juba is keen to resume pumping oil, but there are still security concerns.
The signing of the oil agreement was witnessed by South Sudan Minister for Petroleum, Ezekiel Lalgat-Kuoth, who also, on behalf of the Juba government, appended his signature on the agreement. The oil deals officially allow the companies to resume oil production, explore and drill for oil in new areas where it has never been undertaken since the country gained independence from Sudan in 2011. South Sudan Petroleum Minister Ezekiel Lalgat-Kuoth, speaking at a press conference in the capital Juba, briefly explains the urgency of signing the new oil agreement.
This package now signed, we will now be moving quickly to produce oil in places that we did not have before.
The oil deals come as fighting continues to rage between government forces and fighters loyal to rebel leader Riek Machar, particularly in the oil-rich Upper Nile state. But Petroleum Minister Ezekiel Lalgat-Kuoth was quick to assure the investors that their security is guaranteed.
There's no fear at all. Soldiers are deployed, police are there, national security is there. If you look at the roads, people are walking, going back and forth with their cows, selling them. People are visiting one another. So there is no reason for the partners to say that there is no security there. They should start immediately.
He Yong, director of China's National Petroleum Corporation, which has entered into agreement with the South Sudanese government on oil production, promised to fully cooperate with Juba.
We'll work very hard together with the Ministry of Petroleum and Gas, help that we do our best to do our best to contribute for this country's economic development.
The other foreign oil company which signed the agreement is Petronas from Malaysia. Meanwhile, a local oil company, Petrotech, also plans to resume oil production. Its head of engineering and projects, Ayuer Kaggor, squarely blames low production on the ongoing violence.
The civil war that erupted in 2013 has an impact, of course. The oil fields have been shut down. Any country war is not a good thing to have. A war will cause destruction, will cause also lots of problems for the local people, but significantly it will reduce also the confidence of the investors in the country. So it will also impact the economical activities in the country. So the war is definitely impacting the country negatively.
Most of South Sudan's oil infrastructure has been destroyed in the conflict, which has killed tens of thousands and displaced more than 3 million people.
James Chimanyula reporting.
Uzon.
Now, if you are a young, engaged, soon-to-be-married male in northern Ghana, then this should come as good news to you. The price of dowry has been significantly reduced. Instead of 4 cows, you only have to pay 2 to get your bride. This comes after a consensus was reached by elders in the Upper East region following complaints by young people that they couldn't marry due to the high dowry cost. Maxwell Souk reports.
It is past noon in Boku, the traditional capital of the Kusasi people in the Upper East region of Ghana. And Gladys Abugri, in her mid-20s, is sitting behind her sewing machine. She told me she met a man who would marry her 5 years ago, But up to now, they have been unable to marry because the man cannot raise 4 cows to pay her dowry.
It affected our marriage plans. It is not easy to get 4 cows. Your husband may love you, but if he can't pay 4 cows, your parents will come and take you away from him. So it was difficult for us.
It is not only Gladys and her longtime boyfriend that are caught in this dilemma. Potential marriages are being ruined by the perceived expensive bride price in this area. And that is why the traditional council here has to intervene. They have sliced 2 cows off the previous dowry of 4 cows. Naba Azoka Asigri Abugrago II, paramount chief of the Boku traditional area, told me why they did so.
In reality, there isn't enough money in circulation at the moment, and the youth prefer to remain single. Farming is no longer sustainable, so why should we remain in a culture that holds us back? That is why we decided to reduce the dowry.
The reduction is also seen as a way of liberating women from domestic enslavement. It is said that when a typical Kosasi man works to pay the whole dowry for a woman, he will surely want to recoup everything he spent, as Patrick Adakurugu, a member of the Kusagu Traditional Council, discloses.
So you will want the woman to work for you to be able to get back these 4 cows or even more. For that matter, the woman has to work over and over and over, and that made the woman poorer and poorer.
But a silent majority is protesting the reduction. Sule Agolisi is one of them.
If the traditional council says they have slashed the dowry, was it instituted by a traditional council? It was instituted by our forebears. I have my daughter. You come to marry her. Then I come for my dowry. I say, oh, the traditional council has slashed the dowry. Instead of 4, I'm giving you 2. So if I refuse to accept the 2, how are they going to enforce me taking the 2 instead of the 4? Secondly, love is a question of choice.
The tradition of giving 4 cows as dowry for a woman was once a fortune for families that have many daughters. For example, if a family had 2 daughters, they would get 8 cows, and that could be translated into thousands of Ghana cedis. But Aishetu Hamidu, who works as a secretary in this town, said it is not a matter of profit and loss.
It's not about profit making. It's culture. It's not about profit making. So since it's not about profit making, by reducing it, I don't see anything that will affect the culture.
The decision was announced during the celebration of the Semampede Festival, an annual festival of the Kusasi people in Ghana.
And that was a report compiled by Maxwell Sook.
Well, and we have some comments on this particular story. Anas Awodu says it's a cultural heritage. And Athanas Augustine contributes and says, well, I have to have a wedding now that I can afford it. Prince Moses is just writing in on our Facebook page and says, well, even 2 cows is a bit too much. Make it 2 hens for the sake of love, you know?
Speaking out.
Speaking out this week takes us to South Africa. Gwen Ramaphosa has replaced Kedani Mahlangu as Gauteng's health minister. The latter resigned on Wednesday following revelations that nearly 100 mentally ill patients died while being admitted under her watch. The deaths occurred when the Gauteng Province Department of Health decided to relocate 1,900 mentally ill patients from a licensed health facility to 27 non-governmental organizations who were ill-equipped to take care of them. As Tuzo Kumalo reports from Johannesburg, there are growing calls for all those involved to be criminally charged.
Government authorities and relatives are now demanding answers and punishment for all those who could be responsible for the deaths of the 94 patients. Gauteng Health member of the Executive Committee, Gaitan Mahlangu, has already resigned in light of the scandal. According to the Health Ombudsman, Malekapuru Mahoba, who investigated the deaths, many of them could have been avoided.
A combination of negligence, reckless decisions and actions, combined with appalling conditions in some of the NGOs, have revealed that there has been excess and unnecessary but preventable death for some of the diseases that have occurred.
Family members who constantly warned the Department of Health of the dire conditions faced by their relatives at their new homes simply want those involved arrested. Lucas Mogherane, who lost his 56-year-old brother, says his brother was not treated like a human being.
They were not given food to eat. He was weak. He changed his weight. He lost a lot of weight. So I could see there's a problem here.
His sentiments are confirmed by Cass Chambers from the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, who advised the government against the relocation, but that fell on deaf ears.
Very concerned. There was poor planning. They didn't have the correct assessments on the NGOs. The numbers kept changing. Assessments of the patients kept changing. It was just really unplanned and unorganized.
And the national minister is now fuming and demanding answers.
I'm distressed and very angry, actually. It goes beyond embarrassment because something like this should have been avoided.
But some of the NGOs are refusing to take full responsibility for the deaths, preferring instead to shift the blame to the provincial government. Michael Seshoka is a manager at the Takalani Center for the Mentally Handicapped, where over a dozen patients died.
When we received the patients, we were not provided with the full medical reports of these individuals.
However, Mark Haywood from Section 27, an organization that fought tooth and nail to stop the relocations, says it's not time to explain, but it's time to pay.
I would be wanting to see somebody brought to justice for this, somebody held criminally responsible, because I believe that this is a case of criminal negligence.
The ombudsman has given the province only 45 days to relocate the surviving patients to safe centers, and their relatives are hoping that time will come early enough to find the remaining patients still alive.
Tuzo Kumalo reporting in Johannesburg.
First of all, there is a lot of excitement about the AFCON match tonight, Crispin, on social media. But before we get into football, Nigerians are demanding the right to hold an anti-government rally on Monday after the police allegedly say the event will not be permitted since criminals could hijack it.
But what are the protests about?
Well, Crispin, I will let this Twitter user respond. Chika says this protest is about hardship in the country. Kerosene is 500 naira per litre up from 100 naira, and that's about 1 euro and 50 cents. Let that sink in, she says.
We shall monitor that and see how it progresses.
Yes, and right now into football. Last evening, Burkina Faso played a tough game but lost to Egypt 1-2. Miraji Mwana Kibinda says the match was good, Burkina Faso played well, and penalties are a matter of luck. They were just not lucky.
Well, let's focus on today's game. Egypt is already now qualified for the finals, and they are 7-time winners of this tournament. And I see that they are determined to make it now number 8.
Yes, I think so. And that's a bit, we'll see what happens tonight. So today's game has two of the biggest football teams on the continent. Cameroon is meeting Ghana. And this is reminiscent of the numerous times they've already played against each other in the past.
So what exactly are we looking at here today? What kind of a game?
I think it's going to be a tough game. Remember, these two teams met first in 1982, then in 1998, 2000 and 2008. So 16 years later, they're back at it. So we expect these people who have already, these two teams who've already won 4 times this cup to want to have it the 5th time, you know. So I think this determination is going to make the Ghanaian team fight even harder with the Cameroonian team. And, well, we'll see what happens.
Do you have any favourite tonight? I mean, I told you yesterday that I'm vouching for Ghana.
Yes, I think tonight I will hold my cards close to the chest, because yesterday I rooted for a team that didn't win.
Well, too bad for you.
But some people do have favourites. Albert Matei says Egypt versus Cameroon in the final, so he's supporting the Cameroonian team to win. Clark Kent says, come on, Ghana. Ghana versus Egypt will be great. And there's more people. Pashal Kwalu says, all the best to Egypt as they prepare to win in the finals against Cameroon. So he's supporting Cameroon.
Well, I hope the best team wins, as we say.
Yes, indeed.
Let's leave it at that, Wanjiku. Just before we go, a quick reminder of our main story. Congolese police have fired tear gas to disperse supporters of the late opposition leader, Etienne Tshisekedi. That does it for this edition of Africa Link. As always, you can follow us on Facebook, DW Africa. From me, Crispin Mwakideu.
And Wanjiku Mwaura.
Goodbye.